I'm Just a Jealous Guy by London Drowning. Read by Panica. Summary. Leonard McCoy is 31 and he's too fucking old to be anybody's jealous boyfriend. It's not until McCoy gets Captain Pike stabilized and sedated that he finally drags Jim into the med bay for a thorough examination. Jim acquires bruises and lacerations faster than anybody McCoy's ever met, and it's not until he's threading 9 stitches into Jim's scalp, long after the blood's dried and left his hair a gory, stiff mess, naturally, because why would Jim ever want to make McCoy's life easier, that Jim tells him everything. The Romulan ship, meeting an older version of Spock in a cave, learning who he was supposed to become, alternate realities, skewed timelines, altered destiny, everything changing because of one single moment 25 years ago. For a second, McCoy wonders exactly how far their lives ended up from where they could have been. He wonders about some other reality, some other version of himself, who never ended up out here in the black at all, who's still on the ground with his horses, content that the most he's ever going to see of space is the view of the stars from the back porch. Maybe even a version of himself in a slightly happier marriage, where maybe he was smart enough not to get married at 23. Or at least smart enough to get a lawyer who didn't get him booted off the entire planet. McCoy yanks a little harder on the thread than he means to. Jim glares at him. "Ow," Jim says pointedly. "God, you're not going to be more gentle even if I'm a captain?" "Baby." Jim bats his eyelashes at him. "Yes, schnookums?" McCoy tries not to grin and fails. He palms the back of Jim's head affectionately, even though it's not really the right time or place for it, and Jim brushes his lips against the inside of his wrist. The gesture reminds McCoy that this is probably the best alternate reality he could have hoped for. But he shakes it off and goes back to closing Jim's wound. He figured out a couple weeks into Starfleet training that if he couldn't learn to regard Jim's body in a purely clinical fashion while they're both in the med bay, he wasn't going to be worth shit if an emergency came up. And since emergencies would come up, he made himself learn to detach. Jim got his shots in the same punch-and-go fashion that everyone else does. His bandages are done up quickly and no lingering to check his comfort level. His stitches are closed neatly and swiftly, and here, Jim can't be different from any other patient. No hiding the fact that he knows Jim's body as well as he knows his own, though. McCoy can do professional detachment in a way that he's pretty sure would impress even Spock. In the medbay, he's damn near green-blooded himself, but he knows the way Jim moves, feels beneath his hands. There's no way to unlearn that. Jim knows the rules, which is probably the reason he stretches out his legs and wraps them around McCoy's waist to pull him in tightly as soon as McCoy puts in the last stitch. Telling Jim about this particular limit was maybe the stupidest idea McCoy ever had, including joining Starfleet in the first place. "I'll reopen that scalp wound," McCoy threatens, as Jim's hands settle on his shoulders. Jim ignores him. "In another life, my father saw me captain the Enterprise, Bones," he says. McCoy could point out that it's cheating to bring this up in the medbay, when Jim knows how McCoy feels about it, but he's not that much of a bastard. If there's ever any good reason to break the rule, it's this. It's now. He caves and cups the back of Jim's neck with his hand. Jim's skin is warm under his palm. A faint grin flickers across Jim's face. "All it takes to get some TLC in the medbay is a good sob story, huh? If I squeeze out a couple tears, do I get a blowjob?" "I'll check if anybody's willing, but I don't like your odds," McCoy says, rubbing his thumb up and down along the column of Jim's neck. "I'm good with long odds." Jim's quiet for a minute. "Bones?" "Jim. Vulcan mind melding. That shit's no joke. Spock just... he knew me. He had my number all the way down the line. He knew me like... I don't know. Like he was you or something." McCoy wants to be supportive. He can tell Jim needs to talk about it. And for 3 years, he's always been Jim's go-to guy. But wow, is he ever not a fan of that sentence. He was never the jealous type when he was married. And never this easily. Although looking back, maybe that should have maybe been an indication. And what a dumb thing to be jealous over. Pointy-eared, wrinkly, old-ass hobgoblin performs his mind meld on Jim, tells him their destinies are entwined, their friendship changes both of them forever. So the fuck what? Jim's in McCoy's bed most nights, and maybe he can't do fancy alien shit, but he's pretty damn good at the fancy human shit, if the noises Jim always makes are any indication. But Jim's looking at him like he wants an opinion, like he needs McCoy to help him make sense of it all, as though it's a particularly tricky equation. Jealousy has no place in this. I think it's probably a really good thing that you two are, trusting each other a little more. It'll make the ship run more smoothly, won't cause division among the crew. And I think the fact that you know you're destined to get along will probably help it happen a lot faster. So I'm all for that. But life-changing friendship or not, I'm still pretty fucking pissed at the guy for marooning you on an ice planet, McCoy says. Aw, Bones, you like me a little bit or something? Jim says with a grin. It's a real grin, though, not his usual rakish, everyone in the general vicinity should now drop their underpants grin. It's his real one. Softer somehow. You have to know him extremely well to tell them apart, and McCoy knows him even better than that. Eh, you'll do, McCoy says. Then they're kissing, Jim's legs locked tightly around McCoy's waist and hitching up against him, pulling McCoy down onto the cot on top of him. They're due to arrive back in less than 10 minutes, and sooner than that, somebody's going to walk into the med bay to see what the hell's taking the captain so long to get back up to the bridge. Being caught in flagrante with anybody, let alone the chief medical officer, is probably not the dignified homecoming they should be aiming for after everything they've gone through. Not to mention, Pike is 3 cots away, even if he's curtained off from view and out cold. But Jim's mouth is hot and familiar, slow, soft kisses with nothing desperate behind them, as though they have all the time in the world, needing the comfort and closeness more than anything, urging McCoy's full weight on top of him, even though there's a bruise the size of a serving platter on his ribcage. McCoy stops thinking in clinical terms and slides his hands beneath Jim's shirt, opens his mouth to welcome Jim's tongue. There's a faint tinge of blood in his mouth, but underneath it, he tastes like himself, and McCoy swallows every soft exhalation of his name that Jim breathes out. It's the last time before everything changes. It all sounds brilliant in theory. A few months spent watching Jim and Spock grow into friendship is an entirely different story. The way they move around each other, all unspoken trust, the faith, reading each other's body language, the jokes. Okay, so Spock's Mora will occasionally make a wry comment sort of person, but still, the easy, assumed intimacy is something that took McCoy and Jim ages to grow into, and for Spock and Jim, it's coming as easily as breathing. It's not sexual because it doesn't need to be. It transcends that. Leonard McCoy is 31, and he's too fucking old to be anybody's jealous boyfriend. It's just... he was the one strapped into that fucking death trap shuttlecraft with Jim on day one. He was in the academy with Jim for 3 years. He's the one Jim's gone drinking with and subsequently puked all over, crammed for finals with, had meals with, gone through simulations with. Jim's helped him get over his instinctive panic every time the ship leaves Atmo, taught him to shut down his doctor's brain with its endless repetition about all the gruesome ways there are to die in space. They've lived in the same dorm. They've laughed together, argued, and teased, and yelled, and fucked. They've been best friends for 3 years, lovers for 2 and some change. And if they've never committed, never been exactly exclusive, there's something there, something that's kept them both coming back. McCoy's never been in a hurry to put a label on anything after the epic implosion that was his marriage. And Jim is, well, he's Jim, and that's fine. They've never demanded any more than the other gave freely. Whatever he and Jim would call themselves, though, it's beside the point. Jim's changed him. From the minute he picked the last empty seat on the shuttlecraft and warned the only other guy not in uniform that he might throw up all over him, he's been changing. And he likes the person he's become over the years. Who Jim is and what he means to McCoy. It's shaped him. It's made him someone new. This has been the defining friendship of his life. Is it so goddamn much to want to be the defining friendship of Jim's in return? Apparently, the answer is yes. Apparently, the answer is that his own destiny falls into the footnotes of someone else's. They've completed their 3rd successful mission, and in celebration, the crew's headed to a cadet bar. Scotty's made it his mission to get Chekhov tanked, and by the looks of it, he's succeeded. The kid's wobbling all over the place, flinging his arms around whoever's closest to reassure them that they're his very best friend in the very vast galaxy. It's hard to be in a lousy mood while watching that, but somehow McCoy's managing. He likes this crew. He likes them a lot. And more than that, he respects them down to the last ensign. It's not like he's thinking seriously about applying for a transfer to another ship, because he'd miss them. God knows he wouldn't have wanted to miss seeing Chekhov barely able to stand. Also, well, he and Jim have been together almost every day for the last 3 years. So yeah, he'd miss being around Jim. And it'd be petty and hurtful. He doesn't even want to picture the look on Jim's face if he told him he was transferring. It's not really an option. It's just the same self-preservation instinct that led him to enlisting in Starfleet after his divorce, thinking that things would be better somewhere else, that it'd be easier to adjust to the new circumstances if you're far away from them. Jim's growing into his role as Captain Kirk. Spock is the one he consults for advice these days, which is how it should be. Spock's his first officer. But watching himself slowly replaced inside Jim's life is the kind of emotional masochism he hasn't put himself through since the year before he finally sacked up and asked Miranda for a divorce. McCoy doesn't know what the hell his problem is. He really doesn't. At the moment, Uhura is sitting next to Spock, his hand wrapped tightly around hers as she talks to Sulu, and his features are as even as ever, but the way he's looking at her, there's no room for interpretation in that look. That's the answer to every question right there. If Uhura doesn't feel replaced, if Uhura is as secure as ever, then there's no reason why McCoy should be feeling like this. He's peeling the label from his empty bottle when Jim sits down next to him and squeezes his knee. "Bones, my man. Enjoying the party?" he asks, waving a hand grandly like he built the bar himself, specifically for the entertainment of his crew. When McCoy turns to look at him, Jim's cheeks are a little flushed, and his eyes are lit up and extremely blue. Not drunk, but buzzed. Buzzed enough to be horny. "Weren't you hitting on a blonde up at the bar about 2 minutes ago?" McCoy says. Jim's hands move higher on his leg. Wouldn't you know it, she couldn't name a single multisyllabic, terrifying blood disease. And it turns out that's what I'm looking for tonight. You know anybody who fits the bill? Jim's grinning at him, his wicked grin, the first time since the night of his commendation ceremony. It's only been a couple months, and it's not like they haven't gone longer between sex than this. Even when they were in school, they'd fall into easy, relaxed periods of just hanging together, or occasionally seeing other people. And then, McCoy was never half so aware of the time lapse. He could say this time, the lapse is down to Jim being new to commanding an entire ship. They're both new to this set of responsibilities. He could be more understanding, but he doesn't want to. If that phase is over, if they're going to be the kind of friends who don't fool around, who don't really talk about the fact that there's a time when they did, then fine. But there's not going to be any wobbling back and forth on the issue. There's not going to be any drunk and horny groping. Maybe if he was an ensign, a newly enlisted cadet back in the environment of academia, maybe then he'd be up for this. But he's 31, and he's a chief MO, and he doesn't want to be the convenience somebody settles for when they're buzzed and too lazy to hit on drunk blondes. Jim is Captain Kirk now, and the story is about Kirk and Spock, not Jim and Bones. People grow up, friendships evolve, nothing's going to be the same as it used to be. And if transferring starships is out, then it's time he started adjusting to this new reality. It's time they both did. McCoy rips the last of the label from his bottle and stuffs it down the neck. "I was going to head back," he says, and stands. Jim shoots to his feet immediately. "I'll come with you," he says, almost eagerly, and McCoy has to swallow a groan. "So I can get some sleep," McCoy spells out. "It's been a long-ass day. Enjoy the rest of your night, Captain." He sees the confusion flash across Jim's face, but he ignores it as he turns and heads towards the exit. McCoy is nearly back to the dorms when Jim catches up with him, grabbing him by the arm. "Bones," he says, half out of breath from running. There's so much concern in his voice that it hurts. "What's the matter?"
"Nothing's the matter, sir."
"Bullshit, nothing's the matter, sir? Since when?" Oh, God. Don't tell me you think the captain thing means we can't fool around. You've got to be kidding me, Jim groans. Captain. Jim. Captain, McCoy says firmly. Jim repeats just as firmly. He pushes McCoy back, crowding him up against the side of the building. Their hips are flush together, and it's taking all of McCoy's concentration not to immediately go hard, not to rock back against him, push until there's nothing but friction. Bones, I. Fuck, I don't. I miss you. It's been a long fucking time. Don't you miss me too? It's so unexpected and earnest, so unlike Jim, and it nearly cracks him. We can't do this anymore, okay? McCoy says roughly. It's stupid. It's too much. Jim's nostrils flare, his eyes darkening. It's stupid? He says icily. McCoy takes a long, slow breath, counting back from five. We're out of the academy. I'm a senior officer. You command the Enterprise, and the major relationship in your life is with your first officer. We're friends, and we're always going to be friends, but I think it's time we grew up a little and stopped. The rest of the sentence is lost forever, because that's when Jim crushes his mouth over his, tongue seeking his, probing over the ridge of his teeth, pushing inside sloppily, desperately, like he's a starving man. One hand fists in McCoy's, tangling thoroughly, practically yanking it out at the roots to bring his head closer. He moans. He can't help it. When Jim pulls back, he's laughing. You're jealous. McCoy can't catch his breath. Jim's hand is still in his hair, hips still pressed close. Go to hell. The major relationship in your life is with your first officer? Are you kidding me with this, Bones? For real? You won't fuck me anymore because you think I'd rather be fucking Spock? Because first of all, if you think Uhura wouldn't set her phaser on kill and aim directly at my balls. It's not funny. It's not funny, McCoy says tightly. Shut up about it. The look on Jim's face shifts all of a sudden, like he's just figured out McCoy isn't kidding. Oh, he finally says, quietly. Oh, shit. I thought you were just being stupid. McCoy's face is burning, and it's ridiculous. Jim's had his cock all the way down his throat and fucked him some damn weird-looking positions. So what the hell is there to be embarrassed about anymore? He knows you. You know me. That's not what I. Yeah, okay. There was a mind meld, and it's not easy to forget. Yeah, we understand each other. Yeah, it's all pretty easy. But Bones, you know me too. From way back, you know me. We earned where we are, that it didn't happen so easily. McCoy exhales sharply, because it's such a familiar feeling with Jim, never knowing if you want to slug him or stick your tongue in his mouth. And where are we? Jim shrugs, looking uncomfortable for the first time since he pinned McCoy to the side of the navigation building. We're here, Bones. I don't know. Destiny's a pretty big word. There should still be room to account for choice. A lot of room for that. His mouth is twitching. He's starting to smile, and he doesn't mean to. Jim, did you just say you choose me? Shoot yourself, right in the face. Be a lot of work getting a new medic, wouldn't it? Jim rolls his eyes, cups McCoy's face in his hand to kiss him again, a firm, stop your talking kind of kiss. Don't make me fucking say it, okay? You know. God, you get cranky when I go 2 months without sucking your dick. Will you stop being such a girl if I tell you to move your shit into the captain's quarters? Jim's a captain, and nothing's going to be the same as it used to be. It's time for them to act like adults. McCoy's starting to think maybe that's not the worst thing in the world.